Hello and welcome to the X-Files podcast. Those of you just joining us for this second episode, this is a weekly podcast in which we journey through the X-Files TV series episode by episode and season by season. I am one of your hosts, JP, podcasting out of Southwest PA, and joining me tonight, as always, is Kyle, podcasting out of South Carolina. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, man? How you been?
Quick week, man. Feels like we just did one of these.
I know, dude. We did it like last Monday, so it was pretty quick that we're getting into season one, episode two, I believe today. So this should be a pretty interesting one, I'm hoping. So
absolutely. And before we actually get into the episode, I just wanted to thank everybody for listening. It did seem like we got a few comments and a few people that were really excited about it. Also, we are now a proud member of the Horrorphilia Podcasting Network. Our homie Jason Lloyd over there actually hooked us up with a spot on the website, so you can check us out on www.horrorphilia.com. And we should be on iTunes very soon. He also hooked us up with an iTunes feed. So thanks, Jason, and glad to be part of the network. There are tons of great podcasts over there. Some people probably know Banana Laser and Skeleton Crew, but there's also stuff like Bloody Bits and Doing the Nasty. Tons of great podcasts. Definitely check it out if you haven't yet. You can also definitely find us on our website, which is 22shotsofmoodsandhorror.com, and Kyle's channel, which is The Horror File, and my channel, which is Double Shot J on YouTube.
Sweet. Yeah, and that big shout out to Jason. I appreciate that. And I'm hoping you guys are enjoying the podcast. Yeah, we're going to be going through each season, like JP said, season by season, episode by episode, giving you guys basically a detailed layout of each episode. And like I say, or like I want to say before each episode, there will be spoilers.
Absolutely.
We encourage you guys to follow along with us. No matter if you've seen these episodes or not, it's always fun to follow along and find out what happens. I kind of like to give a layout, like it's almost like an audiobook. I take detailed notes on each episode. We'll go through it and just kind of have some fun. So,
yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think the coolest thing about this is for people to maybe watch one episode a week and then listen to our podcast. And those of you know, you who have not ever seen the X-Files, it's like the perfect opportunity to actually get into it. That's kind of what I'm doing here as well. I'm the noob here.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's fun to go through these episodes. I've seen these episodes, like I said, our last episode. I've watched these all nine seasons of the show multiple times and seen both the movies multiple times. We'll go over the movies at one, when they come up. But yeah, encourage you guys to follow along. You want to go ahead and get into the episode, JP?
Yeah, I believe you have exactly when this episode aired, what the episode is titled, and who directed and wrote it.
I do. So this is season one, episode two. This episode has kind of a funny name to it, and when you hear it, you're probably going to snicker. This episode's called Deep Throat. Honestly, when I first heard that, I didn't think of the obvious sexual reference. I actually thought of since this show is about conspiracies, there was like a deep throat scandal back in like the 80s, I want to say, or maybe it was the 70s. It was a long time ago, and that kind of reminded me of that. This episode was actually originally aired on September 17th, 1993. I'm trying to think how old I was. I think I was 6 years old when this episode aired, which is kind of crazy. So
I was two.
Two. JP was 2 years old. That's nuts, dude. That is insane.
I just turned three recently, so I probably was three.
I was the same age as my son is right now, so that's kind of just wild to think about. So that's how old I am. So this episode was directed by Daniel Sackheim. Not really familiar if he's done. I believe he's done a couple of more episodes. He directed a couple more in the first season. We'll kind of go over that when that comes up. And this episode was obviously written by Chris Carter, who is the creator of The X-Files. So you'll be hearing that name a lot throughout this podcast, Chris Carter. He is pretty much like the Vince Gilligan of X-Files. And speaking of Vince Gilligan, if you guys are familiar with Breaking Bad, he was the big guy behind Breaking Bad. He did direct and write a ton of episodes on The X-Files. That was kind of where he got his start from. So you'll probably hear that name a lot as well.
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, he actually wrote a ton of episodes, and he did direct some of them as well. So we'll probably get into him a little bit and kind of go over his background at one point. Chris Carter, he did do some TV shows and some things before The X-Files, and he has done some things after. He did some of the movies as well, but you'll hear that name throughout the entire, series of podcasts that we do.
Is he the showrunner on the new season?
Yes, he is going to be.
That's good.
I don't know if he's going to be the director, but he is writing pretty much the entire new season. From what I saw online, he is pretty much the one that's bringing it back. So
that's awesome.
Pretty stoked on that. And he also wrote. I don't know if you're familiar with this, JP, or not. He also wrote and kind of created the spinoff show called The Lone Gunman. They only had one season of that show. So I was talking to JP, we may end up doing a podcast about that later on. But who knows what'll happen. But anyway, we'll get into this episode, season one, episode two. This is Deep Throat. This is going to be deep throated down our throats right now. But yeah, it's kind of open up the show or open up this episode. It kind of like just kicks right into gear. There's a lot of action going on in this episode. It opens up and there's a SWAT team that's invading this home. It's just this random home. You see the SWAT team going into this house. They're looking, you hear them. They sound like they're looking for a man, that worked on a military base. It's a woman and her husband, the woman's outside. And the woman's kind of like screaming, crying, doesn't know what's going on. The people in the SWAT team are saying that the husband violated military base procedure. He took a vehicle from the military base. So he was armed and he actually stole this vehicle from this military base. You can tell the wife is very, upset about this. They break into the house. They start swarming around the house, just like a normal, swarm or SWAT team would do. And they find a guy, which would presumably be the husband, it looks like, on the floor in the living room shaking, and he's actually covered in like a rash-like state.
Yes, and I will say that, that little reveal there, like you maybe expect somebody to be like holed up with a gun or something, but you got this like half naked guy like huddled over trembling in a corner with rashes, and they're pretty, gory for, 90s TV. I was like, whoa, that's kind of like creepy. That might be the type of image that if you're a kid and you'd walk past the TV or something, it would like haunt you. It would just creep you out like terribly.
Yeah, and it looked like really, really bad like heat burns or like heats, like sores from like being out in the heat too long. And I mean, they are creepy. I mean, if you saw that and you were, I was six at the time. If I saw that when I was six, I'd be like, whoa, because I was a big wuss when I was six. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, my kid's not, but I was. So
well, nothing's really changed about that.
Yeah. I knew you were gonna say that. I knew you were gonna say something, JP. I know you're gonna start in on me. So. I won't be Jeremy in this episode. I promise. I won't say fuck JP, but I'll be thinking it. So, that kind of like is the scene before the opening, the opening song,
which we actually get this time because the first episode actually did not have that. And I got to say, just to touch on that really quick, that is probably one of the main things I remember besides the theme music just the types of images that come floating by. It really was done and edited like perfectly. It sets up like that whole mysterious, creepy vibe. And I think it's one of the better opening titles or intros that I've probably seen from this era.
Yeah, and I was actually going to say, I'm glad you brought that up. Me and Moods, a while back when I first started listening to the podcast, we were talking about like, 90s like theme songs or like themes from like TV shows a long time ago that were very iconic. And, Moods said that Unsolved Mysteries was his, which obviously the Unsolved Mysteries theme, you hear that, you're scared shitless every time. And for me, it was The X-Files. Like, I feel like The X-Files theme is probably the most, one of the most, at least, iconic TV show themes of all time. It's one of those ones that just sticks with you when you hear it. You don't even need to, you could have never watched an episode of The X-Files and you hear that theme and you know exactly what TV show that is. Yeah. Or at least I think so. So,
It's definitely very ingrained in pop culture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that, and I really like how they never strayed away from that theme. It was with the show throughout all nine seasons, and I'm really hoping with the reboot, they use it in the reboot. So,
or at least a version of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they may update it, you know, with most TV shows they, you know, that get reboots, they may update it, but I think that would be pretty cool for them to keep it. So, but yeah, to get into the episode, so that we just kind of talked about the pre-game part of the episode, and then the obviously
sequence.
Pre-title sequence, you get the title, the music, and then it jumps into where it shows Mulder and Scully in a bar, you know, Mulder is kind of like talking to Scully, and he says he has something to show her, and they go get a table, and Mulder ends up going to the bathroom, and you're introduced to this character who you don't really get any background on. Mulder's, you know, he had just went to the bathroom, he's washing his hands, and this guy, this older man, is kind of similar to the cigarette smoking man, is standing behind him.
Okay, so I actually did think it was him at first, so I'm glad that you cleared that up. You know, somebody who was just starting the series out, you know, you don't have that image of the cigarette smoking man in your head right away. So I thought it was him, but I'm glad you cleared that up.
Yeah, it's not him, but it does seem to me, and you really never figure this out, I think he has about the same, if not you know, maybe more security clearance in the government as the cigarette smoking man. He knows a lot of things that Mulder does not want to know and wants to know, and he knows a lot of things probably the cigarette smoking man knows. But you don't get to know the guy's name, you don't know where who he works for, you don't know nothing about him. And he basically just shows up. He's the one that's eyeing them at the bar, and he basically tells Mulder, he's like, hey, you need to not take this assignment. You're in danger if you do. You know, the assignment obviously being, you know, what the first sequence of the show was. He's like, you shouldn't take this. You guys are going to be in danger if you do take it. Just stray away from it. And Mulder's like, why? And then the guy just walks out and disappears. And
Actually, during that opening bar scene as well, though, I figured I would mention this.
Yeah.
Dana, Scully, and Mulder are, you know, talking a little bit. And there's a bit of one thing that I noticed right away was when Mulder comes into the shot, it's like a very – they're very close. And I think that might be on purpose from the director to once again kind of reconfirm that, you know, sort of chemistry that's going on between the two. And that's just a note that I picked up. But also there is a bit of a, you know, comedic moment where Mulder asks if he could buy Scully a drink, and she's like, it's 10 a.m. or something. And he's like, that's not stopping anybody else in this bar.
Yeah, I think it was 2 p.m. is like
2 p.m. Yeah, which I didn't even think was that late.
No, I didn't think it was that late either. So, but yeah, I mean, Scully, obviously, she's not really – I mean, you can tell Mulder, you know, from his studies and what he's got going on, you can tell he kind of works – or he kind of – he does drink here on occasion. And Scully doesn't seem like she's like that type. She seems more like, obviously, kind of, you know, not high class, but she's more focused on her work.
She wants to stay level-headed and alert.
Yeah, exactly. So
and the guy telling Mulder not to check something out is – like the worst possible thing you could probably do.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree. So, and kind of what they're doing in this bar when they're sit down, I failed to mention this as well, is Mulder is showing Scully pictures of Colonel Blood. His name was Colonel Bloodhouse. That's the guy from the first part of the episode that has all that rash on him.
I believe that was in Idaho.
Yeah, it was in Idaho. So they actually he's actually showing him pictures, showing her pictures of him, you know, basically just talking about the opening scene and how the military won't comment on his status or let, you know, he's basically disappeared at this point. The military took him away. They won't comment on where he's at, what's going on with him. And
of course, Scully thinks that it's just she actually thinks it's weird that Mulder's even interested in it because it doesn't seem like any, you know, unexplained phenomena going on. Like, so she's like, this doesn't seem like your type of case or whatever.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that because I was thinking about writing that down in my notes, but I didn't. But it's a really good description of how Mulder is. Like Mulder, no matter what he's doing, this dude always is going to have a you know, like some kind of plan of action. Like he's not doing something for nothing. He's not going to take a case where there's not so-called paranormal or something that's you know not on
yes
you know that's out of the norm. He's going to always be something. Exactly. Yeah, he's doing something behind the scenes. Scully's not really aware about, even if it's something that seems like she you know would question it. Like, hey, why are you doing this? This is a stupid case.
He knows something also else. You know, just based on the few episodes that I've seen, it also seems like he kind of like you know. pulls the wool over her eyes a little bit to like get her into the case at first. Like he won't mention things. He tries to ease her in a little bit.
Yeah, and you'll kind of see as we go along with this episode that that is 100% correct. Like he, you know, he wants her to come along and kind of like you said, eases her into it by saying certain things. And he pretty much has Scully under his. You know, he's got her wrapped up around his finger pretty much from the first episode. So she's very kind of, I hate to say it, Scully is very much a follower. I mean, she's very, you know, strict and to the point, but at the same time, you can pretty much tell her anything and she's going to go with it, go with the flow and, you know, pretty much do what Mulder tells her. Even, you know, she may question it and she may say she's not going to, but she ultimately ends up giving in to pretty much anything Mulder does in this series. So, and you guys will see that as we go along. So, kind of get back into the episode here. You know, after, you know, they're in the bar and they're talking about Colonel Bloodhouse, his wife, actually, the one from the first scene, contacts the FBI and reports, you know, basically reports a kidnapping, that her husband was kidnapped because she hasn't seen him in 4 months. She has no idea where he's at. She hasn't heard anything from the military. You know, pretty much this is where Mulder and Scully come in and start doing their investigation. So Mulder actually states that the case was shelved without an investigation. And, you know, nobody, investigated the whereabouts of this guy. I guess a lot of people just don't want to question the government. They're like, OK, this guy's missing, but we're not going to mess with the government. We're not going to fuck around with the government kind of deal. And he told Scully that he does have an odd feeling about this case. So he does indicate to Scully that, you know, even though it does seem like a disappearance case, he has an odd feeling about it, probably because the military is involved and, you know, there are reports, other reports of this kind of stuff happening. So let's take a look here. So Mulder, you know, is kind of stating – so also the guy that he meets in the bathroom, he does say that Mulder is going to put Scully at unnecessary AKA risks or quote-unquote risks. And he kind of, you know, Mulder, you know, kind of questions that. He's like, where are you? You know, who are you? To kind of get back to that guy. And the guy obviously doesn't tell him. And then he disappears. So kind of hit that back at that again. So after they're out of the bar, they go back to their hotel room, apartment, wherever they're at. They each, you know, Mulder's at his, Scully's at hers. And Mulder actually calls Scully, or Scully calls Mulder, and notices that he hears some kind of static on the actual phone. He looks out his window and he sees a guy in a van sitting outside of his apartment. And, you know, he looks down at the phone kind of like he's sketched out about the phone. And you realize at that point that he realizes the phone has been tapped. So
sneaky bastards.
Yeah. So obviously the government, you know, knows something's up with that the FBI is involved with this case. They kind of, I guess, track down who the people are that are investigating the case, end up tapping Mulder's phone. So and something that you will find out in this scene, you won't find out until later on in the show, but it's not really a big plot point. So I can go ahead and say it. Scully doesn't know that this phone has been tapped the entire episode. So that's one of the things that Mulder does hide from Scully, which honestly, in my opinion, I think that it was sort of, you know, Scully would have been kind of weirded out about it. But at the same time, I don't really understand why he hid that from her. You know, he does.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that, too. The only conclusion that I came to is maybe he thought that it would be hard to prove.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, maybe he was just scared maybe she wouldn't believe it or something. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it wasn't really a huge plot point. I mean, you see that the government, you know, that you don't need that scene to know that the government is on to these two, you know, FBI investigators and all that. So, but next scene after that, after, you know, you find out the phone has been tapped, you know, Mulder says to Scully he doesn't want to talk on that line. They'll talk the next day, you know, as they're flying to Idaho. And they actually leave and arrive in southwest Idaho to investigate this, you know, these strange disappearances and this strange stuff that's going on with these pilots. So what they do, Mulder and Scully, the first thing they do is they go to the Budapest House, or the what was his name? I'm probably not even saying his name right. Budapest. They go to their house, the guy that disappeared's house, and they start talking to the wife. And she's stating that her husband Bob, his name's Bob, was changing and acting kind of funny after the testing of these planes. So pretty much what he is he's a test pilot for military planes. And she states that he would come home And he would get really angry, and he would shake kind of violently and yell at their kids, and just pretty much she indicates he was a total asshole after he started testing these, you know, these planes out, which, you know, kind of makes you think, you know, what exactly could be going on. You know,
it seems like that there's whatever the government has got themselves into, they obviously don't know enough about it if it's leading to these sort of symptoms and, you know, problems that are happening to their test pilots and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And she also states that he never really talked about his work with, you know, what he did at work, or, you know, never kind of like mentioned like, hey, this is what I did today. You know, this is the plane I wrote, or I tested out today. He never really did any of that. So another thing kind of indicates that something could be kind of off. And you could tell Mulder in this scene, you know, his character is kind of like, you can just tell by his facial expressions, he's kind of looking around like, you know, this is kind of odd that this stuff is going on. And the wife also states that she knows of another man that this has happened to, that she knows of another test pilot who this actually happened to. They kind of leave at that point. They just kind of, they're like, okay, who is it? They kind of talk about it for a moment. And then they both, Scully and Mulder, leave out of the, out of that Budapest house, and they start to get in their car. Scully actually brings up that she thinks that these pilots may be test pilots for the Aurora project, which it doesn't really explain exactly what the Aurora project is. It just kind of hints at that there was a project going on with some military test flights, kind of like the, just kind of like how military tests out new planes and things like that, that she mentions that this could be possibly two pilots that are involved with this, and this could be a military kind of operation that's going on. And Mulder's kind of skeptical of that. You know, you could take a look at him, his character, and he's just kind of like not really feeling that kind of answer, I guess. Like, he knows there's something more to this still. So, yeah, pretty much at this point, they go to Colonel Kissel's house. So, basically, let's go back a little bit. So, after they get in their car, they go back to their hotel. They're obviously staying in a hotel. They're both in separate rooms. They're both sitting in, I believe it's Mulder's hotel room, and they're calling around trying to find some contacts and, you know, find somebody to talk to about this whole situation, about these, you know, these pilots missing, about what's going on. And they're actually given a contact and an appointment 2 weeks, you know, after they call. Obviously, they said in 2 weeks we can do this appointment, to a Colonel Kissel. You know, Scully's like, yeah, I got an appointment with this guy named Colonel Kissel in 2 weeks, and we probably will never have that, you know, we'll probably never get that sit down with this guy. And Mulder kind of like, you know, you could see that a light kind of goes off in his head, and he's like, you know, Colonel Kissel, he goes, what was his name, Colonel Kissel? And he's like, and she's like, yeah. And they, I guess, look up where this guy lives, and they go over to his house, and they sit there and pretty much wait on him to get home. So once he gets home, they're sitting outside of his house, and Colonel Kissel wants nothing to do with these two. I'm pretty sure, and maybe, you know, give me your opinion, JP. I'm pretty sure this Colonel Kissel guy was informed these guys were FBI agents, and they're probably investigating these disappearances before Mulder and Scully went to the house. Wouldn't you think? I'm assuming.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, pretty much they get out of the car, they kind of bombard him with questions and things of that nature, and he just runs into his house. He's like, I don't have nothing to say to you people, get off my property. And at this point, we're actually introduced to a guy named Paul. And Paul just this was kind of weird about this, this scene. He just kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, they're standing on Colonel Kissel's lawn, and this other random guy with, you know, he looks like a reporter, like a news journalist. He just randomly walks up to them, and he's like, you know, it's just kind of weird. It's almost like this guy was dropped off, like, out of a UFO. And, like, he just walks up to him, and he's like, hey, you know, what are you guys looking for? You know, what kind of stuff you got going on? And, you know, Paul said, there's nothing going on in this town. We pretty much just have UFO nuts going, you know, that are in this town that have nothing to say but, you know, UFO sightings. And Mulder starts asking them where he could find these UFO nuts. And pretty much Paul tells him, you know, about this cafe where all these people hang out, and they talk about UFO sightings.
Yeah, it's like a UFO-themed diner.
Yeah. So, and Scully actually mentions in this same scene that the airbase that they're around, where all this kind of, you know, military action's happening, there's this big airbase. It's not on Scully's map. So you know, they go to this diner, you know, where all these UFO nuts are. Mulder's kind of there. They're eating. They're talking to the waitress. There's tons of UFO pictures everywhere. The waitress was selling one of the UFO pictures behind the diner. Mulder bought one, and they walk out. Scully states that this airbase isn't on this map, and you know, Mulder's like, "I already know it's not. So you didn't even have to tell me." So it kind of leads that Mulder's like already kind of like above Scully. Like Scully's kind of behind the, you know, with the game as far as, you know, what's going on in this episode.
Yeah, she's very resistant to even semi thinking something's up at first. You know, like to her it's like, oh, it's not on my map. That is quite weird. But to Mulder it's like, no, duh, it's not on your map.
Yeah, she's kind of like, hey, you know, this is a military base, and there's a lot of sketchy stuff going on. Like, of course, they're not going to put it on the map. Like, you know, we're not even able to get an appointment with this guy for 2 weeks, and he doesn't want nothing to do with us. So obviously there's, you know, something going on here. So so what they end up doing is they end up traveling to this military base. There's like a back road behind the fence of this military base that kind of travel down this path. They just camp out there. They park their car. It's like off in the kind of like the, not the woods, but it's behind where the fence is, where nobody can really see them. And Mulder kind of just goes up onto this hill and sits there, and Scully just falls asleep in the car, and they're just camped out.
Later, yeah, I actually like the military base. Like it felt like, oh, this could be like a real military base.
Yeah, it was pretty huge. I mean, it kind of reminded me of, like, I don't know if anybody, I'm one of those nerds that like look up pictures of Area 51 and things. So like if you actually look up pictures of like Area 51 and things that like really high security, like military bases, it looks literally like this scene. Like it's just a huge plot of land. There's a huge fence around it, and there's a ton of, like, you know, people basically guarding it. Luckily they got to a point in the fence where, or they got to a point behind the fence where there was really not anybody guarding it. And they're standing there, and that later that night after they're camped out, there's these two lights, that Mulder and Scully see. And they're like kind of like in the sky, like floating around. They almost look like if you took a laser pointer onto like a wall, and you took two laser pointers, and you know how fast they kind of move around the wall. That's how fast these lights were going. They look like just like little light bugs kind of like floating around this military base. You know, they're standing there. They're looking at these lights. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this helicopter, you know, is on the base. It's coming toward them, this gigantic helicopter. And then right where they're parked at, these two kids, they look like just regular kids. They come out of the fence, and they start running away. And Mulder and Scully catch up with them. They hide. They all four hide from the helicopter. It has a spotlight. It's trying to find them. They hide behind this tree. Something I wanted to say about this scene that's kind of funny is the guy that is the kid that's running out of this military base. Do you know who he is, JP?
Yeah, because I was watching. I was like, oh shit, it's Seth Green.
Seth Green, yeah, it's like one of his first. I want to say it's one of his probably first like shows, or, you know, first performances or whatever. It's just a really small role, obviously, in this episode, but it's Seth Green. He was what was Seth Green in? I'm trying to think. He was in.
Ticks.
Yeah,
He was in that movie. He was in the Austin Powers movies.
Yeah,
he was in Idle Hands. He also was in Rat Race, Knock Around Guys. He was in The Italian Job. I mean, he was in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he was in a lot of stuff. I know that, like, I think
without
most,
a paddle.
Yeah, without a paddle. I know that most people would probably recognize him as Dr. Evil's son from Austin Powers. I think that was probably his more, not famous, but his more memorable role. But anyway.
Well, actually, you know what? He and I always forget this, but he played Richie Tozier in It as well.
That's right. I forgot about that as well. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, he's probably in a couple of things before this movie or before this show.
Oh, yeah.
But
he was acting in the 80s still, like 84 when he got his start.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of those actors that I haven't seen anything from him in a long time.
He did a lot of TV. Right now he does I think Robot Chicken, right?
Yeah, he does Robot Chicken. I know he did Family Guy, I think, too. He was on there as like, I don't know if he was like an actual, I think he was a guest on there a lot, or maybe
yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
He also guests on Holliston sometimes, Adam Green's TV show. They're actually friends.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool to know. I had no idea. So
yeah, I've always been a big fan of him. I mean, he's one of those familiar faces that'll pop up in a lot of different TV stuff. Everything from Tales from the Dark Side, to Amazing Stories. It's pretty cool to see somebody a familiar face early on in this series. I was actually very curious because I was hoping that he might be like a reoccurring character, but unfortunately, it doesn't. It looks like this was the episode.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of familiar faces in this series. There's a lot of actors that, you know, did this series in the 90s. So we'll see those obviously, but yeah, this is pretty much his only episode for this, which
Seth Green is actually 41 years old now. Just saying.
That's crazy. That kind of makes me feel old. So it's kind of crazy. He still looks young. I mean, from the last time I saw him. So, that's kind of crazy, but yeah, to get back into this, they go to this diner. Mulder and Scully bring the, you know, Seth Green and his girlfriend to this diner. They buy him dinner and they kind of ask them, you know, what they saw basically. As this is going on, there's a guy outside of the diner where they're eating, sitting in his car with a walkie-talkie, basically telling what I'm guessing is the military base that he sees Mulder and Scully, sitting here. He sees them, you know, sitting here grilling these kids. And I think that the military base knew these kids were going there and watching these lights. Because the kids just think that it's a light show. They're not thinking anything of it. Yeah. I'm pretty sure the military base.
It definitely seems like Mulder likes Seth Green's character.
Yeah. Yeah. He pretty much, I think he can relate to him because they, you know, pretty much Seth Green's character would pretty much believe anything Mulder would tell him, like no matter what it was. And I think Mulder likes that about him. So you could tell there's kind of like a, you know, kind of a bondage there with that. So, so let me take a look here where we're at. So we got to the part where they're at the diner. The guy's kind of radioing in with the walkie talkie, telling the military base he sees them there. He says Seth Green. He shows Seth Green's character the picture that he bought at the diner of the UFO, which kind of to me, and
like
I kind of made it. It does, but it does. You know what? I didn't think of that. It looks like a Dorito, but you know what it really looks like? It looks like a Star Cruiser from Star Wars. I don't know if you know what a Star Cruiser is, but you should look it up. It looks exactly like a Star Cruiser, like literally Dorito shaped cruiser. But yeah, I mean, I made a note of that. I just, I don't know. I saw it and I was like, wow, that looks just like a freaking Star Cruiser from Star Wars. They may have even ripped that off. I don't even know. But, he shows Seth Green the picture. He's like, hey, is this what you guys saw in the sky? Have you seen this? And Seth Green's like, yeah, that's exactly what I saw. So, So Mulder and Scully the next day get a message that, the Budapest husband, the husband of the woman from the beginning of the episode, that her husband came home, and Scully got the message. And of course they go over to the house to see this guy. They're going to grill him, find out what's going on at this point. Cause Scully seems very confused. Mulder's very skeptical of certain things. So they go over to the house, and the wife is standing there. She's very upset. You know, you could tell she's been upset pretty much the whole episode, but she's like super upset at this point, saying that that she doesn't think that this is her husband, and you know he's acting very odd. The colonel, which is the Colonel Budapest, or I keep saying his name wrong. I should just call him Bob because that's his first name. So Colonel Bob, I think it's
Budapest.
Budapest, that's it. Yeah, I wrote down like three different versions of his name, so I couldn't spell it. So like I just put whatever I thought it was, and it just I don't know. So we'll just call him Colonel Bob for now. So Colonel Bob is there, and he's very confused. You know, he's answering questions that Mulder's asking him. He's a big football fan. Mulder's asking him questions about football. He's responding to those questions fine. He's asking him questions about his kids. He's responding to those questions fine. But any question Mulder asks him about flying or like flying a plane, he can't answer any of those questions whatsoever. So obviously that's jumping out to everybody as this is odd. This guy is a military pilot, and he doesn't know anything about how to fly a plane or how these planes work or, you know, what's going on. So, very odd.
They begin to suspect that, the government can somehow remove certain memories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Mulder, they're walking, they're leaving the house, and Mulder just, says to Scully that he believes that his brain was rewired. He was given a selective memory.
Scully thinks that, well, you can't do that. You can't just pick and choose what memories you want somebody to have.
Yeah, she thinks it's complete bullshit. And Mulder, obviously, you know, he's kind of laughing about it. He's like, yeah, like he knows that it's probably what happened, but Scully is not going to believe him. So basically at this point, what happens is Mulder and Scully, they're driving down the road in their car together. And out of nowhere, they're cut off by two cars. And men who look like Secret Service. So they're kind of like this car like pulls out in front of them and stops them, and then another car pulls behind them so they can't leave. And all these men that are in like Secret Service uniforms get out, and they knock on their window and they ask Mulder and Scully to get out of the car. Which they do, obviously. They have to comply. And basically they tell Mulder that and Scully they have to pack up immediately, get out of the town. And they start taking all of the evidence from what they've gathered so far, all the pictures and all the, you know, pretty much everything that's in their car out, and they're destroying it right there in front of them. These guys are very, very persuasive, I guess you can say, because the one guy starts like punching Mulder in like the stomach, like anything Mulder asks, he's like punching him in the stomach, which I can guess like I can kind of like understand, you know, they're digging too deep here with this military stuff, and they were probably told to make sure by higher up people in the military, make sure these people don't come back. So I guess by punching Mulder, that's kind of, you know, an indication is you're going to get it worse if you come back kind of deal. Pretty much Mulder tells Scully at this point that the phone was tapped in the beginning of the episode, and tells her about the man, the guy that approached her in, you know, Washington, D.C. at the bar, the guy telling her the guy basically telling her, him that they need to not go into this. This case, they're going to be going to be put up with unnecessary risk to the case. And Scully's like, why didn't you tell me this kind of deal? And she basically says at this point she wants to leave. She wants to go back to D.C. Mulder lies to her as usual, and he takes off in his car. Scully kind of runs after him and is like, where are you going? And he won't tell her. He actually meets up with the Stoners, Seth Green's character, and his girlfriend, which is kind of just like Mulder. And they go to the fence opening where the Stoners were going to watch this light show, where they were at in the beginning of the episode, where they were kind of camping out. And Mulder just walks into the clearing where the two Stoners say that they see this light show, which I think they said was like 45 minutes from the fence, which is crazy. It's a 45-minute walk where these two people are going to watch this light show, which is just insane in my opinion. I just can't imagine these two Stoners.
Dude, it was the 90s. It was the freaking 90s, yeah. Dude. You didn't have much to do in life.
It's definitely, I mean, these two, you can tell, don't have anything going on in their lives. I mean, they're straight like buzz the first time they meet, like Mulder and Scully. So
Seth Green, when he's eating that burger at the restaurant,
he was killing it, dude.
Yeah, he's all smiley and shit.
Dude, he was like high as a kite, dude. It's so funny because he's like the perfect person, like the perfect like actor to play like a high person. He just like looks like one. So, yeah, Mulder walks into the clearing where the UFOs are being, where they're, you know, watching the UFOs. He actually goes farther into the yellow zone where Seth Green basically tells him not to go. Apparently, there's a zone where there's like apparent, you know, quote unquote landmines in a certain area of the military base where Seth Green's like, you know, I hear there's just landmines here. You shouldn't go this far. And of course, what does Mulder do? He goes that far. You know, obviously, he does pretty much anything somebody tells him not to do.
Yeah.
So at this point, he does travel onto the base. He's on like this landing area where I guess they are landing planes and planes are taking off. And he's standing, you know, right there, just standing at the on the landing strip, and he sees a UFO. It doesn't look like a flying saucer. It does look like the UFO from the picture that you see earlier in the episode, the Star Cruiser. It's like very small, and it hovers over him.
Or the Dorito.
Yeah, or the Dorito. It looks like a hovering Dorito. Really bad CGI Dorito, I must add. But I guess for the early 90s, it really wasn't that bad. So.
Honestly, how are you watching these on Netflix?
I'm rewatching them on Netflix. Yeah, I've watched them on DVD and Netflix before.
Okay, the DVD transfers are not the greatest. I don't know how it differs from the Netflix transfers. But, you know, 90s TV, it kind of looks like 90s TV, really. But I think it actually does, like, CGI and stuff a little justice because you can't see it quite as clearly.
Yeah, do you have the DVDs or?
Yeah, I have first four seasons on DVD.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember. It's been so long since I've watched them on DVD. I've actually watched this series. This would be my second time on Netflix going through them. They don't look bad on Netflix, but the box set, and I wanted to mention this at the beginning of the episode, so I'll go ahead and do it now since we're almost done with this episode. The Blu-ray box set actually comes out December 9th. It'll run you, I think I saw it on Zavvy.com for about $200. Which honestly, if you look at everything that comes in it, really is not that bad. I mean, it's expensive for a box set, but it is you get 9 seasons of a TV show, plus there's booklets, there's a big box that comes in, you're getting a ton of special features, and there was a lot of stuff in the box. So, obviously, if you don't want to pay $200 for the box set, if you wait probably a little while, it'll probably go down a little bit.
Yeah, you're probably able to get it for about $150 in a year.
And I really feel like $150 is like a really good deal for that. So
yeah.
But yeah,
it's a great set. It's a nice set.
Yeah, I mean, even the box that it comes in is really, really nice. I mean, it'd be really cool to have in the collection. I'm definitely going to pick it up. Maybe not right when it drops, but I'll eventually pick it up because I'm really interested. You know, even with doing this podcast, I'm interested to watch some of those special features and kind of talk about those as well. So I think that would be really cool to throw into some of these episodes. But yeah, get back to the episode. Mulder sees this flying Dorito UFO thing, and it hovers over him, and this bright light just like hits him, and he looks up, and it's actually one of the more iconic scenes from the show, because if you actually watch a lot of the TV spots back in the day, and you see a lot of the previews, it's Mulder, basically looking up at this light, and it's from this scene from this episode. So he looks up at the light, and the light and the flying saucer just like goes away; it just disappears. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, you see tons of military vehicles starting to surround Mulder. He's running away from them, and he just stops. And they pick him up and put him on a stretcher, and they just take him away.
My only thing about that scene is, what did he think would happen? Like, what was his plan?
I don't think he had one. I think
he just wanted to see.
I think that like he didn't expect for that to be that. Like, I don't think he expected for that UFO just to hover over him. Like when he got to the base, I think he was going to go up to the base and look inside. I don't think he expected that to happen. And whatever was in that UFO, sure as fuck did tell the military pretty quick that he was there. So, I don't know if the UFO told the military he was there.
I think they might have knew. I think they might have like probably saw him coming a mile away.
Yeah, so it was kind of a weird. It has a lot of things that make you think, and it doesn't really explain any of that kind of stuff. But that's up to the user or the watcher to decide. But he's taken away in a stretcher. The next scene, you see him kind of being wheeled through this base. He's being sedated. You can tell that they sedate him. He's like in and out of it. And he is being wheeled on the stretcher, and he sees a ton of men in white suits. And he actually gets a glimpse of one of the UFOs behind like a white, looks like a white veil. But then he just kind of passes out. So I think that they injected him with something, or you do actually see him being injected with something in the vehicle they put him in originally. And then he's kind of just in and out of it, about to pass out when he's going through the base. Let's see here. The next scene after Mulder passes out, you see Paul, which is the weird guy that just, like I said earlier, showed up on that dude's lawn and just kind of like told them where these crazy kooks were that like UFOs. He's actually, Scully's like in the office of this hotel, and she walks up and she sees Paul like with the door wide open of her hotel room, and she's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And she's kind of really, sketched out by it. And he's like, "Yeah, I went to knock on your hotel room door and it was wide open." And she knows that she locked the door or closed the door. Then she hears in his car a walkie-talkie go off, and it's something about the military base. So she goes and runs and gets in his car and locks all the doors, and opens up the glove compartment, and she finds a gun, and she finds a security level badge for the military base with his picture on it. And it's actually security level 2, whatever that means. I don't know if that, if 2 is the highest or what, but he works for the military base. He was kind of just trying to, I guess, investigate them to try to get them to go away. And she kind of caught on to his game, and she knows kind of he's with that military base now. So Scully steals his gun and takes him hostage, puts him in the car, and she's like, "You need to bring me to the base. I need to find Mulder." So, you know, after that scene, they start driving to the military base. It cuts back and shows Mulder on this operating table getting injected with something. He's tied down to the table. And, you know, Scully obviously has this guy hostage. They pull up to the military base, and, you know, she tells him to leave the car running. And all of a sudden, a military vehicle comes out of the base, and it's got Mulder in it. And Mulder kind of gets out. I don't know. What would you think? Does it look like Mulder is just like kind of like completely and utterly like has no idea what the fuck is going on in this scene? Like, I don't know. He got out of the military car and he just is like staggering and very, very confused.
Mm-hmm. It's probably, you know, whatever they injected him with or whatever, it probably has a great effect. And then it kind of winds down as the body gets used to it or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and like, it could have been that. Maybe he was just coming off that. But obviously, you're going to find out, you know, here in a couple minutes, I'll tell you kind of what happens with that. So, Scully at this point is like super, super fucking pissed. She's like, I'm done with this shit. We need to get the fuck out of here. You could tell her that she's like just, she's really sick and tired of dealing with this military bullshit.
She's completely over it.
Yeah, she's over it. She's gonna believe what she wants to believe, and I can promise you it has nothing to do with UFOs at this point. So she knows what she saw, but she doesn't want to believe it. So it shows the scene where Scully's writing her field report, which she does, you know, at the end of every investigation they do.
Oh, one thing that we forgot to mention was that when Mulder was showing her the pictures, he had mentioned that he believes that a crash site's evidence was shipped to this facility, I believe, this airbase. And he's impression that they're probably making military weapons under alien or extraterrestrial technology or UFO technology or whatever.
Yeah, and Mulder pretty much knows before this investigation goes on. You could tell he pretty much knows that the military has this UFO technology and they're using it, and that's what he's thinking they're using it for. They have this unidentified, and when we say UFO, I'm not meaning just like little green men aliens. It's just unidentified flying object technology, like technology that came from the sky. They don't know where it came from. That's more advanced than our technology. So, he believes that stuff's at the base, you know, whenever he's showing Scully these pictures at the beginning of the episode, which obviously you kind of learn at this point in the episode that is pretty much true. Mm-hmm. So, she writes this field report up at the end. She obviously puts all of her information in the case, the case notes of what she believed went on. She doesn't believe it's UFO stuff. She just puts in what she thinks. And she basically says there's no evidence to support what Mulder thinks. So, the last scene where it shows Mulder in this episode, he's running on this track. I guess, just running around this track, kind of, winding down after this whole case. And the guy from the bathroom, that kind of was like in the bathroom telling him not to go into this case at the beginning of the episode, he shows up on the track and Mulder walks up to him. He's like, I know a lot of things that I could share with you, but I can't share these things with you because I'm doing them in my best interest. And I want you to, I would need you to basically understand what my best interest is for. And Mulder just knows that this guy knows a lot. He's high up in military or high up in the government, or high up in what Mulder needs to know. And the main from this conversation that they have, the main quote that just kind of struck me is, Mulder looks over at the guy and he says, I don't know what they did to me. I know that, I don't remember anything of what was on that base, but I did see something. And he's like, what did I see on that base? And the guy said, you saw a military UFO, basically. And then Mulder looks back at him and says, are they here? Or do you know that they are here? Indicating, extraterrestrials are on Earth. And the man states they have been here for a long, long time. And then he just walks off.
Now, my question to you is, like, why did he say that? Like, why, if he's trying to keep him away this whole time, why did he let him know these things?
I guess at this point he knows Mulder's intentions, and this is just my guess. I think he knew at this point that Mulder was, you know, Mulder's intentions are he wants to find out the truth. Mulder's kind of a reliable guy. He's not going to go expose this to like the entire FBI
is that he would, but he just can't. Like nobody's like believes the things that he says. He kind of got that reputation by now.
Well, even that, Mulder doesn't have anything to corroborate any of this stuff. Like, he doesn't have any proof of this. Like, even if he was told by this random guy, he doesn't even know who he is. Like, even if he went and did that, there's no point. Everybody would think he was a joke.
It's like the guy has nothing to lose out of the situation, I guess. But,
That's pretty much the end of the episode. I mean, he pretty much tells Mulder at this point that he
that is a creepy moment when he says they've been here for a long time.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of those things where, you know, I don't even think the cigarette smoking man would tell him something like that. Cigarette smoking man's more of the type of, to hint around things. He wouldn't straight up say, hey, you know, these little green men have been here for a long, long time. So I thought that was pretty cool. You never find out who the guy is. You never find out where he came from.
Is this it for him? Is he ever in another episode?
You'll have to find
out. All right, cool.
So, yeah, you guys are going to have to listen in to find out kind of like whether or not he is. Something I will say, that's the end of the episode. I wanted to kind of wrap up. I put a note here in my notes that I feel like the music, again, I was talking about the music of this, you know, of the last episode. The music of this series makes up this series, in my opinion, man. The music is so creepy. That final scene where the guy's telling him this stuff, they got this creepy background music playing, and then obviously the title, you know, the ending sequence comes on, it's the theme. It's just, this music is just so, you know, profound, and it's like so perfect for this series. It's crazy. I don't know. I just want to kind of mention that again before we dropped off the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Me and Moods had a recent discussion on our newest episode of the 22 Shots show that, music has such an impact. And I mentioned that specifically in those Fulci films we watched that I feel like without the music and the score in all three of those films, they would have been nowhere near as good. They might not have been worth it. They might have come off as cheesy.
I've seen all three of those films, and I 100% agree with that. The music in like 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, the 80s and 90s were the huge, in my opinion, had the best music for like, you know, movies and TV shows. And The X-Files is a huge example of a TV show that the music just plays a huge part in the entire series. And, you know, I'd like to hear, you know, I want you guys to check out obviously the episode or listen to the entire episode. But like JP was saying in the beginning of the episode, we upload these to our YouTube channels. This is Double Shot J. I'm the Horrorphile. Leave us some comments. Let us know what you guys thought of the episode and what you guys think of, you know, the music or just anything you guys want to say.
You guys commenting and communicating and having these conversations will completely motivate us to keep doing this. So that is very important to us. So please definitely do that. But Kyle, I want to ask you, what did you think of the episode? I think the good way to probably end each one of these shows is just overall thoughts on the episode.
I completely agree. I will say this is what I'll say about this episode. I liked this episode more than I liked the pilot. I thought that this episode had a little bit more creepiness to it. It kind of went into the government cover-up a little bit more. You kind of understood a little bit more about how the government cover-up worked. The thing about the first episode I did like was the ending where the cigarette smoking man was in that warehouse with all this stuff. But this episode was more like, hey, this kind of stuff is going on in the United States. These cover-up things, these things that Mulder, you know, you kind of get to know Mulder and Scully a little bit more in this episode. I really liked this episode a lot. I thought it was very, very good one. So.
Me personally, I actually do like this episode a little bit more than the first one. At least I did the first time that I seen it, which was a couple months ago. And this time watching it, I did sort of feel like it was a bit messy. I got to be honest. Like, I felt like seeing Mulder get captured and, you know, whatever so easily, I just felt like it kind of, to me personally, I feel like it kind of weakened the character a little bit. I don't know what happens going forward, obviously, but to me it's like, okay, well, let's just say they wanted to kill him or something instead of just erase his memory, then he would have been dead. Like that, it is a little disheartening for that to happen so early on. It seems like that would be something that would happen like later on in the show or something, but like just right away, like he did something stupid. He honestly did. And I don't know if that's supposed to show that side of the character, that he isn't, you know, perfect or whatever, but you know, I didn't really love the idea of him just, you know, full-heartedly just rushing in there and getting caught. I don't really know how I feel about it. I guess I have to see more of the show to really see like if this is a regular thing that happens to him or if it's, you know, whatever.
I completely agree with you on that. Like I didn't really think about that. I mean, it does show you that Mulder can be very you know, he's not very careful sometimes. And you will see that he is like that throughout the series. He's very you know, spur of the moment, you know, just jumps into mm-hmm. things. And you know, in that I do agree with you. He did get caught in that episode a little too easily and a little too quickly. If you ask me,
he got caught too easily and too quickly. But that isn't the only problem. It's the problem that what did he expect to do? You know, he just expected to go check things out. Like it's a military base. Like you're not going to be able to just walk into it and like look at things, especially when they know about you and know that you're up to this shit. So to me, I don't know if it came to a problem with the actually writing of the episode. Or if it was just, you know, I don't know. But I didn't love the whole way that played out. But it's a very minor problem in a TV show. I mean, this show's supposed to be these, like, action-packed things. And that's one thing I will say. This one did feel a little bit more fast-paced than the previous episode. I like the Seth Green cameo. That was really cool. He's a cool actor. And it's fun to see a familiar face. But overall, I mean, I did really enjoy this one the first time I watched it. Liked it a little bit less this time. So I do think I liked the pilot a little bit more. But still a pretty solid episode. And this is one of the main story arc episodes. This is not a Monster of the Week episode. But I believe next week will be our first Monster of the Week episode, correct?
I'm actually pretty stoked on getting into those. I actually love the Monster of the Week kind of episodes.
I think most people do. Honestly, when you hear people talk about the X-Files and their experience with it, I often have heard people say like, yeah, the, you know, main story arc's pretty cool, but oh man, some of those Monster of the Week episodes are my favorite episodes.
Yeah, and I'm actually like super, super stoked, and I know this is far off, but my favorite episode of all time of the X-Files, I won't say what it is right now, but I will say it's in season 4. I'm very stoked to do that, and it is a Monster of the Week episode, and I think it's actually a lot of people's favorite episode of this series, but I'd be pretty stoked to do that. But, you know, like you were saying about this episode, you did make a point there with Mulder. I mean, he did, you know, with what he was doing, I feel like I agree with you on that. He did get captured, but as this story progresses and as this, there is a backstory to this entire series, and as the series goes along, you see the character development. There's a ton of difference between the first season and, you know, even the fourth and fifth season with these characters and how they mature and how the writing matures on this series. There's a lot better writing after the first season, and you guys will see that as we kind of progress along.
Yeah,
with this.
which is cool, and I look forward to it. That's what I think is so fun about this. By the way, is that I am going in blind, so I might actually say something that's really stupid if you knew in, you know, hindsight. Like you guys, some of you guys who've seen the show, like, will know things that I don't, and I'll probably say something stupid, but that's the fun of it. I know you are excited to eventually get to that season 4, but we still got 22 more episodes in season 1, so that is awesome,
that blows my mind. I can't even like believe that there's so many episodes in the first season. That goes to show you, like, I mean, this is an hour, well, 45 minute TV mm-hmm. show. It goes to show you that it did very, very well within the first couple of seasons. So, yeah, I hope you guys are excited, as much excited as I am to explore the rest of the season. And I do appreciate you guys watching and are listening and continuing to listen. So
yeah. And, before we get out of here, let's, you know, just quickly plug some things that we got. First of all, I have something really special out right now. Week 2 of Italian Horror Month, the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. You can check that out on the website. It's a pretty good episode. It was just me and Moods on that one, but I thought we had some great discussions. We cover a lot of topics, and you know, we break down some Fulci films, so check that out. As well as, I'm actually going to be uploading a few reviews on my channel this week, so Double Shot J on YouTube, check that out as well. As always, you can check us out on our website, our group page, 22 Shots of Moods and Horror. And, of course, the new partners, horrorphilia.com. What do you got, Kyle? What do you got going on, man?
Yeah, man. Pretty much just check out my YouTube channel over at The Horror File. I upload tons of reviews, to that channel. Actually, I have a couple of series going on. I got the, my Disturbing Movies series. I got my Video Nasty series that I upload, too. I do a lot of Artsploitation releases, which is one of my favorite companies.
I agree. Mine too.
I do a lot of reviews there, so check that out. Just youtube.com/thehorrorfile basically, or you can go to, the search feature and look it up. Subscribe to me. Also, I'd like to plug another channel that I do frequent reviews on. I do a review every Tuesday on this channel. It's called Body Bags. Where, basically 7 day a week, horror reviews, each one person does a review per day. It's 7 different people. Me and Moods, and a couple other people, Derek, do reviews on that channel. So check that out. I don't know. Do you know what is there a URL for Body Bags?
Yeah, I believe it is, /C/, Body Bags. It's something like that. I think maybe if you just type in /Body Bags, it pops up. There was not a URL when I created the channel, but I know through YouTube you can kind of create one. I believe I did. Kyle was mentioning Body Bags. I actually used to be a host on that channel. I actually created the channel, and right now I'm kind of taking a step away from it, but it still has awesome reviewers on there, such as the homie Kyle and the homie Moods, Derek, Matt, a bunch of people. So check that out. You got anything else, Matt?
Check it out. Nah, man, that'll be pretty much it. And I appreciate you guys listening.
Yes, absolutely. So stay tuned, guys. Hit us up next week. We will be doing episode number 3 in season 1, which is Squeeze. So I am JP. That is Kyle. We are done. We are through. We are out.